Welcome to Radio Sepharad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sepharad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is the meaning of the name Esther? Sarah Sonneborn is an Israeli historian. She has a master's degree in the history of Spain and Sephardi Judaism from the University of Alcalá de Henares in Spain, and has done doctoral studies in Spanish and universal history at Bar-Ilan University in Israel and the Spanish National Research Council. Sarah has been a lecturer at the Institute of History at Heinrich Heine University in Dusseldorf, Germany, and has also taught at the University of Haifa, Bar-Ilan University, and IDC Herzliya in Israel. This week, she's speaking with us about the history behind the Purim story.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Sarah. First, in case any of our listeners are not familiar with it, could you very briefly tell us what the Purim story is?
Yeah, we'll speak about... Thank you for having me here. And I will speak about the Purim story, Megillat Esther. And only to a little bit to remind, it was in Persian Empire, and it was about Queen Esther. And I will speak later what Esther means and about her. But it's mainly about Esther and Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, the king of Persia, and Vashti, his former wife. Then we have Mordechai in the Megillat Esther. It is her cousin. It's not her uncle, like many people think. It was her cousin. And we have the bad one, Haman. Yeah, we just had the Purim celebration, and only to remind, and so we will come later to our history, the historical background, and I speak about the issue of Purim, okay?
Okay, so tell us about the historical background. What was happening in Persia at the time?
Exactly. We have to go a little bit further back and to the destruction of our first temple in 586 from Nebuchadnezzar. It was from Babylon. And then, of course, we got Jewish people got deported from Jerusalem and were not slaves, but they lived in Babylon under completely different conditions. And they lost their center, the religious center in this way. And so they had to identify them completely new. They could not even practice really their religion in this time. But later, 550 years before our common era, Persians conquered the whole empire and became the Persian Empire. And the Persians were completely different to the Babylonians. They let people go back to their origin, and they could freely practice their religion and their customs and traditions. And they were much more open, and they had a wonderful and very sophisticated postal system and lots of streets through the whole empire. And so they could communicate with all the different regions, and they had translators everywhere. So the main issue, the Jews could live everywhere they wanted to, and they had translators everywhere. The only thing they had to fulfill is to pay taxes and to be obedient to the king's orders. And this was the background from the Persian Empire. I wanted to tell you something about Persian religion. It is interesting because the Persian had the Zoroastrianism, and everyone was free to choose to be a good person or a bad person. The good one was Ahura Mazda, and the other one was Ahriman. So people could choose always what they wanted to be, good or bad. And from the Zoroastrianism came they called their clerics magos. And the magos are the three Reyes Magos in Spanish.
Yeah, in English.
In English, the three are...
Magi.
Magi. So they came from Persia. They were... their name was Caspar, Melchior, and Baltasar. And so when they visited later in Bethlehem, they bring three gifts. They bring gold and incense and myrrh, the plant. And it has a meaning. The gold is light and it is self-awareness. The incense is like to have your religious belief. And mirror is something like a symbol for perfection and correct yourself. So it's just a background from Persian religion and history. And now we are coming to the Purim story. Yes. So we said Jews could live in every region they wanted to. And the Purim story begins with a huge celebration. And Ahasuerus, the king, celebrated for 7 days with a lot of wine, and in the middle of his celebration, he wanted his wife Vashti to come and dance in front of all his visitors. Vashti refused. She said, "I'm not going to do it." And it was the first time that a king called his wife and she was not obedient. So he got very angry about his issue, and it was like first time we heard about a woman rebelling against her husband's wish. And so her ministers told him that she has to expel her because she could be a symbol and an example for other women. So he did not want her to allow women to not to be obedient. Very important issue. So she got expelled, and he was searching for a new wife
who would be more obedient.
He had a huge harem, and so Mordechai, the cousin, heard about that Ahasuerus is looking for a wife, and he told Esther to present herself. Esther, I come to her name. Esther, it comes from the Hebrew word Hester. It means to hide, and it is special because to hide something, she did not speak about her Jewish background in this moment. It has a different meaning, where we come later to, but in this moment, she did not speak about her Jewish background and hid her origin from Ahasuerus.
Why did Mordecai want her to present herself?
To have more influence, maybe, because it was an honor. Maybe she wanted to have somebody take care of her. He was her cousin. She had no parents, so he took care of her. And she got a preparation for 12 months. It's written in Megillah. She has lots of perfume and oils, and she got ready to present herself to Ahasuerus. And he liked her. And so we know the story. He married her, and she was his favorite wife. He said she was his queen, and so Esther, she gained some influence. But then there was one issue that Haman, he was a minister from Ahasuerus, went through the city, and everybody bowed down. Only Mordechai, he refused to bow down before Haman, and Haman asked him, why don't you give me this honor? And he said, no, we don't do it for a person. We only obey our God. And so he got very angry, and he felt very much hurt in his ego, in his honor. And he complained to the king. He said to King Ahasuerus, you know, we will have a problem. The Jews are not obedient. They make problems. They don't listen to our laws, and they don't give us honor. And Ahasuerus said, do what you think you have to do. And Haman decided he wanted to expel the Jews or to execute them even. So in a very hard time, and he wanted to have a 12-month period to do it. And Mordechai heard about. He heard about the issue. He heard that he's going to expel or to execute the Jews. And Mordechai talked to Esther and said, you have to do something to help our people. And Esther had a very good idea. She said to Mordechai first, look, tell all the other Jews to fast with me. Fasting is a very, very important issue in all over in our religion, because fasting is a purification. And if your body is not occupied with eating and drinking, our spirit is free to completely only with our thinking and spiritual forces occupied. And so she asked all the people, all the Jewish people, to do it, and they did. And she fasted for 3 days. And the last day, she went to Ahasuerus and asked him to have a celebration, a dinner, more dinner. She wanted Haman to come and Ahasuerus and so for an invitation. But before she could do it, in this time, a woman could not only go to a king and tell, and even if she was his wife, and to tell him that she wanted to invite him for dinner. She could not do it. She had to ask him for permission, and he sent him his scepter. The scepter was of gold, so it's a symbolic issue too. The scepter of gold. Gold is always a meaning of light and... And not only light, it's the light of wisdom. So she touched the scepter and she asked him, would you accept to come tonight to dinner with Haman? And he said yes. And there, her wisdom, she was very smart, she asked him and she said to him that Haman's wishes are coming to complete. He wants to have force and strength and influence even more than the king himself. So it was very smart. And the king asked Haman, he said, what would you do to a person when you want to honor him? And Haman, he answered, he said, you know, I would dress him in beautiful clothes, let him sit on a beautiful horse, and let him ride through the whole city that everybody could see him and honor him. And the king said, okay, so do it with Mordechai. So, of course, Haman got very angry. And so in the end, you know the story of Purim. In the end, they succeeded. And in the Purim is something like a lot. A lot is a... Like in a lottery. It's like it can be a good outcome or a bad outcome. So it means pur, from Purim. So in the end, the Jews could defend themselves, and Haman got punished for his decision to expel or to execute the Jews. Oh, this is the end of the story. But I wanted to come back to some symbolic things, like we had the beginning, a huge celebration, and they drank wine. And later, when Esther invited for her dinner or banquet, they drank wine too. Wine was always mentioned in the Megillat Esther, and wine has a special reason in Gematria. Gematria is when you count the Hebrew letters. Every Hebrew letter has a numerical value. And so when you count yain, the word for wine, and sot, secret, it's 70. So it's you say when you drink wine, the secret comes out. and we have to drink a lot of wine on Purim or on our celebration. At least we say we drink so much wine that we cannot distinguish between the blessing of Mordechai and the curse of Haman. And we never get drunk in our Jewish religion. It's not like this, but Rambam said from the 12th century, Maimonides, he said that you have to drink so much wine until you cannot distinguish between and you fall asleep. So it's easier to say. And this is about wine and about the celebration. And I wanted to come to Hester, so the name of Esther, Hester Panim. Hester Panim is to hide your face. This is Esther's name. She hid her face, her Judaism. And we say Purim and Yom Kippur have the same background. Like Yom Kippur, you have a pardon. You ask for pardon, and it's individual. In Purim, the whole people of whole Jewish people get pardoned, and we have the Purim Purim celebration is with lots of simcha, lots of happiness, and happiness is stronger than only to reflect and ask for pardon, because when you do something with happiness, it's easier to fulfill. It's easier to do it.
Something that I think is interesting is that the scroll of Esther, the Megillah, doesn't mention the name of God, and that's not very common.
Exactly. It's not very common. There are two books in our Torah where God's name is not mentioned. First is Shir HaShirim. It's a song of songs, you say, in English. And the second one is Megillat Esther. It's not mentioned. And they say because the Jews lived in Persian Empire, they said they had 127 regions. And they had to send all the notices everywhere over the Persian Empire, so they did not want to use God's name to that nobody can misuse it.
Tell us something about the importance of Esther as a female character.
Exactly, like we said, hidden. She did it with her femininity and her wisdom. She did not do it obvious, not with strength, not with any manipulation. She only convinced her man by in a good and very feminine way, and she had an influence like Sarah. Like it's not like 127. We have this number 127. It's 127 regions. She was queen of 127 regions, but 127 years of life had Sarah and from before. So there's a little bit of connection from strength of Sarah and Esther.
Is this story particularly important or meaningful today in Judaism?
I think so, because it's like we say we are returning to ourselves in Purim too. So we are, it's like Yom Kippur. We make a little bit of reflection about ourselves and our who we are, and we say it has something to do in Purim, Yom Kippur, and Hanukkah. There is in Purim we are reflecting who we are and asking for pardon. In Hanukkah, because it's a celebration of light, we get all the ideas, and on Purim we are ready to make changes.
I mean, with the women's liberation movement all over the world and with women gaining more power, mm-hmm. and more visibility,
yeah.
Has the story of Purim and the story of Esther been, let's say, reawakened or reemphasized at all?
We can think about. I mean, maybe the disobedience from Vashti and the wisdom from Esther and her femininity and her smartness to convince Ahasuerus, it's a good example of feminine power.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.